You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
Welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-hosts, Vanana.
Hello.
And Aaron Varola and his amazing Technicolor green screen.
What's up, folks? Welcome to episode... You had to throw it in there, huh?
I did.
Episode 122 of the Fanboy Garage. As always, it's a pleasure to have you guys with us this week. Another episode of The Mandalorian has dropped, and holy cow, it is an episode. There's lots of that to talk about. We lost another great star from the Star Wars franchise, David Prowse, which we'll talk a little bit about. And then there's some drama. Seems like there's some drama brewing between Joss Whedon and HBO. So we'll get into that. But let's start with The Mandalorian.
Sure. So for
I don't want to talk about it. So I don't want to start first. Yeah, you guys.
For anybody anyone who's been saying that there have been like these filler episodes or whatever episodes this season, like, well, this wasn't one of them. So this episode, man, let me tell you, this one to me was a game changer in a lot of ways, because I feel like this season, one of the things that we've been talking about is how I feel like the universe for this show is getting bigger, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like with this episode in particular, like this universe just got very big. And this show is no longer now just this little, like, Star Wars Western where, like, this Mandalorian is, like, the lone gunman who's trying to deliver this child to, like, the Jedi, which is kind of what the original feel was for the show. Mm-hmm. Like, this is now a big Star Wars show, or at least potentially. I mean, let's see where they go with it from here. But obviously this was the week where we got to see Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka Tano. And this is going to sound really dumb and silly, but like for some reason, the idea of Rosario Dawson playing Ahsoka Tano, like in my head, I had pictured like Rosario Dawson. Like Rosario Dawson playing.
Oh, you
the
mean
character.
Like no makeup?
Yeah,
like,
I wasn't
character?
Even thinking. I like the idea was like I was trying to figure out how they were gonna make it her look like. And like
oh my
so,
God.
When she comes on the screen, I was like, oh my God, that's Ahsoka Tano. Like it looks just like the character got ripped out of animation.
Yeah.
And I should have realized that that was gonna happen, but that's why I say it was like, duh. But
yeah,
like that first moment was still like caught me off guard. And it was really awesome to see. And we got a lot of information in this episode as far as, like, we got a name now for what was originally Baby Yoda. Then it was, you know, well, no, it's really the child. And now there's a name.
Yep.
And we got a tease for a very well-known villain in the Star Wars universe that exists here, you know, I would assume that they're not going to throw that name out if it's not going to factor in somehow. So, and I mean, you can get into it. I mean, you and I know how that story ended as far as with Star Wars Rebels goes, which is what makes me think, like, are we going to see more characters now from that popping up? So, but this was an amazing episode. There were lightsabers and Jedi things and... it was just, I was eating up like every second of it. So,
yeah, this was like, I mean, like second, everything that you just said, what you said about the world suddenly like opening up even bigger than we saw it. I mean, I thought this was the most like jam packed informational kind of like action episode we've seen even in season one and season two, even though we did get a lot of action in season one, but like season two did kind of, you know, a lot of people say, okay, they're filler episodes or whatever, but it went on a climb Yeah. Like, you needed all of the other episodes to get to where you were, and it was so worth it because it was so juicy and, like, the prize was there if you just, like, stuck to it, right? It just felt like you were on this ride and you got to, like, the top of the, you know, the climb, and now you're just, like, free-falling with, like, your hands up, like, on a roller coaster and just riding this thing and seeing where it's gonna go, which is so exciting because, like, you got a name, like you said, you know, we got Grogu, which is, like, so cute.
Yeah.
I texted you guys. And I mean, Aaron, I know you're going to go a little bit more in depth about it, but I was really excited about just all of the other characters that we saw in this episode. I thought the episode was so well directed by Dave Filoni. You know, we finally got, like, his piece in there, and it just seemed to build upon all of the other episodes that led us up to it, and it just got packaged so nicely to kind of, like, send it off to, like, the next section. And that's what I think the show does so beautifully. And the directors and the, you know, the producers, like, they really, I think they really think it out really well how they're going to structure it and deliver it to the audience. And it's so subtle and done so well that you don't even think about it, which is what's great, because as an audience, you're experiencing all of it very seamlessly. And that's what I felt about this episode. It was just an apex of everything we've seen before. And it just feels like we're now going to go to, like, the next part of the roller coaster. I think the whole series is going to, like, shift a little bit. We were talking a couple weeks ago about maybe him taking off his helmet, you know, kind of like not really maybe thinking about the way and how he's supposed to be. So I would love to see him kind of take that off, and we see the actor kind of like on the second half of the show. My two cents.
Yeah, there is. God, there's so much to unpack in this episode. Okay. So, first things first, Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka Tano, best casting ever.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't the first time where we've seen, and obviously Bo-Katan was one of those characters that made the transition from animation to live action, but before all of that was Saw Gerrera, who was played by, actor's name, come on, quick. From Rogue One?
You're talking about Forrest Whitaker.
There you go.
Yeah.
And, he's been, that character has evolved in other media, like in the video games, and we've seen him in animation. And so he's developed, and you're getting a little, you know, a lot of what we've seen of him has been like before we meet him in Rogue One. And there's been a lot of fun stuff that they've done with that character. Ahsoka Tano is, I saw someone's comment say something like, oh, it was a fine episode, but, like, the character didn't line up. Well, we've never seen Ahsoka Tano at this point. So we've aged with her, right? So we started the Clone Wars with her. She pops up in Rebels. She's a little older. This is after Rebels.
Yeah.
Right? So she's a little different. She might have been through some shit, too. The one thing that struck me was the name of the episode is called The Jedi, right? And I don't think the title is actually about Ahsoka, because Ahsoka technically is not a Jedi. She's walked away from the Jedi Order. I think it's just the idea of the Jedi, right? So that's the most important piece of what this episode stood for, is it kind of set the stage for the rest of the universe and where the Jedi are, right? So there are hints, there are rumors that maybe they exist. There's obviously people who have had encounters with them, know of them, because they refer to Ahsoka as the Jedi. But I thought it was a brilliant episode, such a step up for Dave Filoni. And it was funny because I was texting Phil, one of our devout listeners, and he goes, oh, do you think we'll get Ahsoka next episode, as in last week? And first I go, no, I don't think so, because I thought that they were going to hold out. And then I'm like, wait a second. Episode 5 is Filoni's episode.
Yeah.
He better be the one to direct Ahsoka, like, sure, Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka Tano. And boom, we get her. And all of that, all of the information about Grogu and the connection that he has to Mando is it's amazing to see on so many levels. But the strongest piece of that connection is in Ahsoka's reaction to that connection. And it is, she recognizes the attachment that Grogu has to Mando and connects it to Anakin Skywalker's yep. connection to Padme.
Yes.
And she says it, "I've seen the best of us become the worst," right? And that is a pinnacle moment in Rebels when she faces off with Darth Vader and finally connects that this is Anakin Skywalker and she didn't want to believe it. And, you know, like her whole world is shattered. And so that that fear in her is really cool to see that. And that apprehension about training and all of that. The deep cuts in terms of Easter are like riddled throughout this entire episode. So when they talk about Yoda, we hear Yoda's theme being played in the music. And by the way, the music this season, like Ludwig Göransson,
yeah,
dude, killing it. Just killing it, man. Like, this is so, like, this is such a different, like, sound for Star Wars, and I love every bit of it. Like, I'm always looking to see if the next couple of tracks are released so I can just jam out to whatever he stitched together for us, because every episode is a riff off of the Mandalorian theme. I just love the music. So good. Michael Biehn, holy cow. Didn't even recognize him. Did not recognize him. So Carl Weathers, dude, he's like 70-something years old, looks exactly the way he did when he played Apollo Creed. Michael Biehn, I'm sorry, dude. You must have been doing some crack because you look like shit, bro. I had no idea it was him. What happened to your eyebrows, man? What happened to your eyebrows, bro? Why are you looking like you were a drag queen out of drag?
Wow.
No eyebrows. I had no idea what was going on with him. Anyways, didn't know it was him. Great, great sparring session between him and Mando. God, what else? What else is there about this episode? Holy shit. Thrawn. I don't think we're going to see Thrawn. I'll be honest.
I don't
think it's going to happen. No.
Ever?
No, I think we will. I don't know if this is the show we're going to see him. Because I definitely think that they are setting up an Ahsoka Tano
sure.
show.
That works.
And her and Thrawn being her villain.
Yep.
And her like, you know, her chase.
Yep.
Is what's going to get people to want to watch it.
So you think this was almost like a backdoor pilot? I mean,
for her?
As much as you could get in this universe for that, setting up that show. Yeah.
Okay. I think Moff Gideon is our bad guy.
Well, see, that's the thing I was going to say. Mm-hmm. So why I say this whole thing just got a lot bigger is because that's the thing. This is episode 5. There's 3 episodes left for this season. And they have yet to address in any major way Moff Gideon, right? Who we assumed was going to be the big bad throughout this season. And so far we've seen him once this season, like, as a hologram.
Twice.
And then the Boba Fett thing that they teased, which not paid off at all yet, right? And now, again, your theory could be correct that this was sort of if this is going to serve as a backdoor pilot and the Ahsoka thing is going to lead to her own show, I'm thinking, well, if that's going to be a factor in this show too, now like we have all of this stuff that got introduced in this season and there's only 3 episodes left. Like, are they just going to blow the doors off of the last 3 episodes? Or, like, what's going to happen? Because there's a lot here. Unless they know they're going to keep going with it and they need to just keep kind of laying.
Season 3 is, like, done, right? So season 3 is, like, in the cans, ready to go. Obviously, there's a lot of storytelling. And by the way, like, and we've said it before, but Filoni and Favreau, these guys, they are the architects of the new Star Wars. They can do no wrong in my eyes. These guys are killing it. So I think they have started to map out all of these different paths for these characters. What I love is that the Filoni in ending not only the Clone Wars but Rebels he's put various characters in different directions, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you've got the folks from the ghost. In their path looking for Ezra Bridger.
Yep.
And that puts them looking for Thrawn because Thrawn is attached.
And that's what I was getting at when I said, are we going
to
see more of those characters with that name drop? It's like, well, there's a lot that comes with that name drop.
Oh, a whole bunch. But the thing is, though, she didn't, you know, Ahsoka doesn't mention him at all. So when she talks about, you know, Jedi getting up on the meditation stone, she's not talking about a master Jedi. She's not talking about Ezra Bridger, you know, in that sense. So who knows where he is in all of this? Luke Skywalker is the only Jedi master we know of at this point. And, you know, I think there's a couple, I think there's a lot of exciting things from a TV perspective that Star Wars will be doing in the near term. Like Obi-Wan is obviously a thing. Ahsoka Tano, I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, yo, this episode got so many views. Like, we're totally going to do an Ahsoka show. And I feel like that's already a thing because they hold on her for a little bit and they allow you to just take it all in.
Yeah.
You know, like,
they also
she's so good at
they
this.
They also, so one, I don't know that you would cast her in this role if it was just going to be like someone who's going to pop up every once in a while. Also,
you mean Forrest Whitaker?
Yeah. Also, they really did a lot of, you know, because now I'm thinking about your point as far as like, you know, like a whole backdoor. They set up a lot of like her universe, like her arc.
Yep.
Like this was her episode. Almost everything about this episode was hers. I mean, even the stuff that the Mandalorian was involved in, like it was like her stories, right?
Yeah.
Her information, her villains, her battles. Like, so they did a lot of that. So you're not going to do all of that if we're now going to just move on and like, whatever, they're going to go there and he's going to follow. So it would make sense that they've already put in place this universe for her that we can then follow along with her going forward.
Right.
So yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, look, they're going to want a show besides, and the Mandalorian's been this amazing success, right? And here's another character that you could take in a different direction. I mean, you mentioned before how, you know, people say, oh, it didn't feel like the right thing. You're right. This is an Ahsoka Tano that's in a different place than we've seen her before. Clone Wars was a long time ago. Rebels was a long time ago by the time that we've seen this, right? So this is now a character that it's way after all of those things. So she should be in a different place. And we don't know what she's done still since, right? I mean, we've just... Yep. So there's still a lot of story to tell there, and you could do it in a way where it's like, here's another way to do something that has hints of the familiar, right? So you could do your Easter eggs and your real like your geek stuff, and you could reward the people who watched the Clone Wars and watched Rebels and know the characters, but you could also make it fresh so that it's something that anybody could watch. Like, I'm looking at this episode, and like, that's one of my things with The Mandalorian has been all this time, is that it's like, people could watch this show. You didn't necessarily need to know who Ahsoka Tano was to get what was happening in this episode, because it wasn't filled with like, they weren't hitting you over the head with like, why she should be important. Right. It was just a character that existed in this episode. She was filling us in on things that we need to know as viewers, right, of this show to follow along with the story that we're following along with. And, you know, like, I could imagine that if you didn't really know anything about this character, you weren't really lost at all.
Dude, I sat next to Jess, who watched the episode a little while ago before we got on. And the thing started and she's like, holy shit, who is this?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She never watched Clone Wars with me, has never watched the Rebels. That was like my thing. So she's watching this and she's like, holy shit, this is a badass character. Why does she have white lightsabers? That's so cool.
Yeah. Right?
And then she kicks ass and she's like on the edge of her seat. Like when Ahsoka loses a lightsaber in the episode, she's like, oh shit. I'm sorry, I just said oh shit a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
Oh shit, you know, and she got like, she's invested and she knows absolutely nothing.
I feel like that's me, because I've never watched Rebels, I've never watched Clone Wars, you know. But it's gotten me to be interested in those things now, you know, and in those shows now. But I thought the fight scenes and her having like two white lightsabers were amazing. And then the magistrate who, you know, was behind
stunt woman.
Yeah. And for her to be like the head of you know, trying to find her and kill her, but then her also having the skills to then fight for what she wanted and having that come down to a showdown. I was like, hell yeah. Yeah. You know, and she was using that Beskar staff. I was like my mind just went, you know, me, because of all like my training and everything. I was just like, how did they do those fight scenes? What were they thinking? What is it? Like, what's the angle? And like, I was just watching that just with like pierced eyes. Like, what are they doing? And then it was just, it came down to this showdown that was so exciting for the episode because she didn't get what she wanted, you know? And just overall, I felt the same way. Like, Jess was sitting next to you, so enthralled in it without knowing any of the history. So was I.
Yeah. You're going to, by the way, if you do a little research on Ahsoka's style, it's very different than any other Jedi.
Yeah, I could tell.
It's definitely dope. Like the she picks up two lightsabers after fighting Ventress, which is like a Sith apprentice. So that's why when she loses a lightsaber, she switches it and holds it on the up. She's the only Jedi to stand like that with a lightsaber.
That's interesting. I know what you're talking about, because I train in double swords and I don't like the single sword for the mere fact that both your hands are on a hilt. I like the Eskrima sticks, like the Filipino Kali sticks, because your hands are separate, and I do the double swords because your hands are separate. So looking at her moves, I've only trained mostly in double stuff. Like single stuff I can do, which I like, but I don't like how your hands have to be like together. Yeah. Like it's, it feels so like enclosing, like you can't open your hand.
Well, that's the key. When anytime you have double stick, well, or in this case, double lightsaber or double sword, whatever, the idea is you can do, like, it's all scissor motions, right? So you're opening and closing, so you can defend closed, you can open wide, you can angle out, you can angle in. That's like the whole concept behind it, as we get geeky about.
Yes, no, and that's why I was so excited about seeing Ahsoka, because like, number one is Rosario Dawson, which I love. So it's like, you got me there. And then seeing her, like, you know, when she was going through the fog and just taking out all the guys. And it was just shot so beautifully. Like, you see the lightsabers. You see her light up. She's, like, executing people. Then she turns off her lightsabers. You don't see her because of the fog. And she's just this, like, ninja.
Yeah.
And it's, like, so cool that they gave her all of these characteristics in one episode. And I just felt like the character development into her was just so specific. And that's what we love about her, though, because it is so specific.
Her lightsabers ignite slower, which is really cool. They do like a very slow reveal, almost like you're pulling
like drawing a sword. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they make a very different sound. They're not, I mean, this is me.
You know,
they don't glow as like fiery, you know what I'm saying?
This episode, I was talking to my boyfriend because we were in Star Wars in Universal, was it Disney or Universal? Disney. It was in Disney, right? So we were there last year, last November. Okay. So a few months before the pandemic hit. And I made my own lightsaber and I went through that experience. Have you guys ever done that before?
No, suck though, because I am dying.
It is so cool. Okay. It's expensive, but it is cool. So you walk through this whole experience. They have actors there, you know, walking you through this whole immersive experience.
Cast members.
Okay, cast members. It was a great experience. And after watching this episode, I actually missed the lightsaber that I made that's sitting in my apartment in New York. And I was just thinking, man, I want to get my hands on that lightsaber. And I wish I had it, like, I would have been the dork that would have turned my lightsaber on. And you know what? The cool thing about this lightsaber that you make is the sound effects. Like when you turn it on, like it's like zoom, and then like it does light up slowly.
Yeah.
I got to show it to you guys. It is so cool.
Yeah. When you, because I have two, But I have the father-son edition. I have Luke Skywalker's and Darth Vader's. And I definitely want Ahsoka Tano's white lightsaber. I think that's the dopest thing in the world. But, yeah, I mean, they did such a good job at styling her. And, you know, it's funny. As I was watching the episode and I sat with it for a little bit because I've watched it three times, is the fact that, God, I really dislike the sequel trilogy. As time is going on, like, and I'm getting more of this, these different stories and other characters that have absolutely nothing to do with Skywalkers, I am becoming even more disappointed with what we got in the sequel trilogy.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm with you on that one.
And the thing is, too, I felt like as I was thinking about it, I was texting Phil, and I said, you know what? The thing is that the sequel trilogy, I felt, was burdened by the idea of Skywalkers and this idea of lineage and this idea of family. And I felt like we, as people who are watching this universe and experiencing it in the cinematic form, are stuck with this. Like, they're the concrete blocks, and all we can think of are Jedi. And all Jedi have to be Skywalkers or some sort of connection to that, right? And here we have a bounty hunter who is a Mandalorian who's given us so much color and so much, like, such a dynamic look at, you know, at this culture. And then you have Ahsoka, who is not a Jedi but is a very different breed of Force user, and but yet it's grounded in the things that we were, you know, sort of introduced to in the prequels, ironically enough, right? Like, even the last episode I talked a little bit about, the one that Carl Weathers did, was so important because it connected us back to this idea that the Empire and its remnants are still hunting Force-sensitive kids, right? Which had a lot to do with the Clone Wars, has a lot to do with, they talk about M count, which is midichlorian count, which was introduced in the prequels. And it connected us, it connected the prequels, connected us to all of the other canon in the animated form, and then it connected us to the sequel trilogy. And there's a lot riding on these shows and The Mandalorian, because it is stitching very, very seamlessly all of these versions of Star Wars that each generation has had an opportunity to witness and embrace, right? Because I say embrace in a sense, because OT people, myself, I don't really have a fondness for the prequels. Like, OT is my thing. That's my jam.
Right.
But someone who was growing up with the prequels adores those, right? They may feel a certain way about the sequel trilogy, like most people do, but for another generation, the sequel trilogy is their Star Wars. Mm-hmm. The Mandalorian is something for everyone.
Yep.
It's a multi-generational thing, and it does that very well by not overplaying the fan service, but by, and this is all Filoni, I would say, Filoni and Favreau, but Filoni, because Filoni has a very grounded, he pays homage to Lucas, but they do a great job at connecting everything together and not alienating, you know, fans of this particular, you know, version of Star Wars or that version of Star Wars, and they're doing a great job at kind of melding it.
Well, that's that reverence for the the history of it. And the thing is with that is, you know, they're able, in fairness, they're able to do things in television format that Disney wasn't going to do on film, like when they were developing what became the sequel trilogy, right? So they focused the majority of their fan service on, like, throwing in characters from, like, the original trilogy that, right, like, everybody would know, right? Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo, Chewbacca, all that stuff. The fan service that they're doing here in The Mandalorian is brilliant because, like I mentioned earlier in the show, like, it's real. It's for people who, like, I mean, who watched Rebels, who watched The Clone Wars, who've, like, followed this stuff, which is not everyone, right? It's a specific audience, mm-hmm. but it's hardcore Star Wars fans, but it's still a show that's accessible to everybody. And that's why I wouldn't say that it's made me more disappointed in the sequel trilogy. It's actually made me just forget about the sequel trilogy. Like, I have to remind myself, and I'm not even being fine, like, I have to remind myself sometimes that that was a thing. Mm. Like, right now, Star Wars for me is The Mandalorian. Yeah. And The Mandalorian has brought me closer again to the original trilogy and to the Clone Wars show and to Rebels, which, you know, a show that I loved, and like that universe of Star Wars, which is, those are the things that I really loved. I'm not a huge fan of the prequel trilogy, but I respect its existence and that it's a thing, right? And it's canon. And I've become less of a fan of the sequel trilogy as time has gone on, especially the way they ended it. So for me, like, the Star Wars that I hold on to is the original trilogy, is the Clone Wars, is Rebels. And because to me, the Clone Wars was the prequel trilogy done right.
Right.
Right. It's the best of that timeline.
Yep.
So I don't like when people say, like, oh, that's worth. No, it's not worthless, because we did get some great stories told from that timeline. Right. And that, like, the Clone Wars, basically.
Yeah.
That, you know, they were able to do to fix a lot of the things that I thought were needed or were wrong about, or from my perspective anyway, about that prequel trilogy. So it's just, it just makes me feel like all Star Wars warm and like gooey inside, like when I watch it, you know, it gives me
one,
that.
And it's one writer. That is the most important piece of that puzzle in my mind.
Yes.
It's that Jon Favreau has written every episode thus far in this season. Obviously there were other writers, but you know, they were all working together.
Amazing.
And that cohesiveness is what makes brilliant storytelling. And it is what is absolutely lacking in the sequel trilogy, because J.J. Abrams wanted to go this way. Rian Johnson went that way. J.J. Abrams goes, wait a second. We got to get this back. And it's a mess.
Yeah.
And it pisses me off.
And the other, you know, the other thing too is that it's just the fact that we're seeing like characters like Ahsoka, and you're hearing like, you know, Thrawn and all that stuff mentioned, like it validates is not the right word at all, because I don't want to make it seem like it, that stuff was like not valid before, but like it brings those characters and that section of this universe that had only previously been reserved for like real hardcore fans into the mainstream, which is why, like, that's why I say, like, it brings me closer to that now, because like I feel like there's now a mainstream connection to those characters. So like a lot of people could be aware of them. So there's going to be more conversation about them now and more excitement.
Yeah,
about them.
Totally. I feel like there's also a difference between Favreau, you know, taking the helm and having someone like Filoni even direct the episode. But the fact that Aaron brought up is that Favreau, there's one writer, you know, so we've had many different directors for each episode. But Favreau and Filoni kind of do, you know, mold the season, right? Filoni has so much knowledge and he's like right on point with, you know, anything Star Wars. I feel like with like, you know, Abrams and Johnson, it just seems like they're directors that had opportunity to make a Star Wars film that at that time it's like, no, I'm gonna make a Star Wars film, like I'm gonna, like, it's about me, you know, like I'm the director that's behind it. Whereas with this series, and I think the beauty of having it on TV and having multiple episodes is that you can expand the worlds and you can give us this. It's just a different feeling. It's not a blockbuster feel. It's not like I'm the next director that's going to helm this blockbuster and keep with these themes of family that you're talking about, Aaron, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's always about family and about the Skywalker family, right? And this is it. Like, we are seeing an evolution, and I think it's about time we see an evolution. If this, you know, franchise is going to stay, we need to see it evolve.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing now with The Mandalorian. We're seeing it evolve, and for it to live, we need to see other characters. Our world has changed too. Like back in the 80s, when you created this concept, the concept of maybe family and, you know, father and son type of battles, I mean, those are always going to exist, right? Like in any type of story that we tell, that's like a staple of any type of story.
I mean, it exists in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, and it exists there too, because now he's having a connection, kind of like a father and son connection.
100%.
But they're evolving it so that it's not pure father, blood, son. You know, it's you're taking care of a child, right? Like that's very different. And the relationship between a Mandalorian and a Jedi, like they said, is usually like opposite. Now he's finding that compassion. So they're evolving it, which I think is such a good thing, because they're kind of saving the whole thing and you're going to get spinoffs from it. So it's a really beautiful thing that they've done, because we're not just getting another, like, this director is going to helm this and make it a blockbuster.
The thing, and I hate referencing this film again, but I will, because I love it. I still love it. The Last Jedi. I think The Last Jedi, in retrospect, moved too fast with that evolution. Like, it was almost like a snap. It was like a big bang kind of thing, where it's like, we're going to change all this and we're going to introduce you to some new things. And I remember someone saying, oh, you know, in The Mandalorian, like, we're getting all of these, like, they've got underground fight clubs. They've got all, I'm like, yeah, this is like Canto Bight, the casino planet that we see in The Last Jedi. And people are like, whoa. I'm like, it's the same thing. Like, why can't there be a casino planet? And that is the beauty. I mean, that is the opportunity that The Mandalorian has at its advantage, is that it can slowly introduce these things. Whereas, like, Chris, to your point, the format for the cinematic version, things have to happen relatively quickly, and you have to kind of stay on track with, like, okay, we're going to tell the story of Rey and Finn and these people. Whereas, like, The Mandalorian, every episode is a new planet, a new adventure, new creatures, and it keeps on opening the universe. But like a creak of a door, it opens up a little more. It opens up a little more. Versus like The Last Jedi was like, boom. Doors open, we got new creatures, we got new planets. Holy shit, Luke Skywalker isn't the same person, you know? Like, I mean, all of that stuff was jarring for people.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it such a divisive
film. Well, and the amazing thing
Go ahead.
The amazing thing about The Mandalorian, too, is that it's moving forward, but it's backwards. Like, it's moving forward back, because this is a time period that, while we haven't really seen before, it's pre things that we have seen. Right.
Or things that we haven't seen, because,
well, it's things we haven't, but it's the past for our purposes. Right.
Yeah.
So it's not set in a future like the sequel trilogy was. It's in the past, but it still feels fresh and it's new, and it's moving forward by telling original stories with characters that we are either us as hardcore fans aren't familiar with and we're learning who they are. Or in general, the mainstream audience is like, a lot of these characters are unfamiliar, right? Even the ones that we may know. But they're ones that we haven't seen like in movies before. So it's able to tell these new, fresh stories and take this new spin on it, but doing it back then, you know, which is, it's not an easy thing to do. And you know, that's why I love that they're able to. You're right. I mean, I'm thinking more about it, like with that sequel trilogy, it was just like they got caught up in a feeling like they needed to immediately start to explain things. So you had like this new set of characters, and then you had the old school characters, and every character needed something. So we had to give the old school characters something to do, right? And we had to introduce everybody to these new characters and give them all purpose and backstory. And I think all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute, this is a lot to have to do. Like, we have to, you know, show everybody what Han Solo's been up to, and Chewbacca, and what Princess Leia's been up to, and Luke Skywalker, and what's his deal. But now we're also worrying about backstories for Rey and Finn and you know, Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, whatever, all of that stuff. And it's like, there was too much converging. And it was also the fact that they were so obsessed with making those characters, these new characters, like, a lot of their intentions and motivations were familiar. It was all nods to what had come before, Whereas, like, if you look at The Mandalorian, it is what came before, but it's fresh. It's a whole new, even though, so it's like you can, just because you're in a previous time period doesn't mean you can't tell a fresh original story.
Yeah.
And just because you're in the future doesn't mean you're automatically going to tell a fresh original story. So I think there's lessons here to be learned from 100%. Both The Mandalorian and the Star Wars sequel trilogy, or even a film like Rogue One, which I think managed to in many ways accomplish similar things than what The Mandalorian is accomplishing, like on a much bigger scale. Again, telling a story that set prior to things that we had already seen, but introducing us to new characters that were fresh, that didn't have the same motivations that we had seen before, and that we became connected to, you know, in a shorter period of time. So these are hopefully they, and I guess they are, I assume they will have learned these lessons, because now you're not really hearing much talk about movies and trilogies and all this other stuff. So you know what? I'm okay with that. If Star Wars is now primarily a Disney Plus thing, great.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Who would have thought, right?
Hey, I mean, there is some really, really good stuff here. And I'm like, Skywalker who? And at this point... I mean, it was funny because I remember people saying, oh, do you think, because like Luke Skywalker exists in this universe at the Mandalorian. I'm like, I hope they never do it.
I don't think they will.
To me, it literally is like, here, step into these cement shoes and let's throw you off the pier. I feel like you just burden the crap out of so much stuff. You know what I mean? Like, because all of those expectations against, oh, what happens to Grogu? Does Grogu go train with Luke Skywalker? I hope Grogu just disappears. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Or he dies. Who knows? They all go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah. The other thing is,
that's the thing. Hold on one second. Real quick. That's the thing about this whole universe is that it's a galaxy, right?
Right.
And what they've done a great job, too, is showing the idea that not all news has gotten out to all of these characters, and that word of mouth is the way that people are hearing of things, right? So, right. In The Last Jedi or even The Force Awakens, we are only looking through one lens, right? One perspective, and it's all of those characters, like, all looking in the same direction. Meanwhile, there's an entire galaxy of people that are doing other shit.
Yeah.
And we don't know what those people are doing. You know what I mean? We don't know what other adventures they're on. So there's, you know, there are still opportunities.
Sure.
Connect to the sequel trilogy and make it better.
And I'm going to make your point here that you were making back in the day with the Obi-Wan thing, which is I wouldn't want to see a Luke Skywalker in this either, because we already know how that story ends.
Yeah.
And we can't undo that. Whether you're happy with it, unhappy with it, it doesn't really matter, because it's there. And until they, you know, which they're not going to make the sequel trilogy non-canon, like, you know, we've seen some of these stories that maybe they'll take. It's a thing. It exists. That event happened. That Luke Skywalker exists. It happened. It's a thing. It's how it ends for him. We can't undo that. So it's like, I where are you going to go with the character at that point? Like, just to show him at this weird, like, midpoint, you know, where it's like, I'm okay with that. It would ruin everything. There's so many great characters that they could introduce that are both familiar and unfamiliar, that why would you even need to? You've already had success doing that. Why would you have to go that route? I don't see it. All right, but let's get off this for a second, because we do have, unfortunately, some sad news within the Star Wars world, which is that David Prowse, who was the physical embodiment of Darth Vader in the original trilogy, he passed away at the age of 85 this weekend. And, you know, David Prowse, fascinating story. He was a bodybuilder. He actually was a professional wrestler in England in the 60s and 70s. Was not a big star, but which is why you don't hear it mentioned very often. But he was the guy in the suit for the most part, except for the lightsaber scenes, right, where there was a stuntman who was playing that role. But it wasn't his voice, and it ultimately wasn't his face. When we, you know, they replaced his voice with the voice of a then unknown or lesser known James Earl Jones,
right,
which became iconic. Clearly, that was a decent decision to do that. And then when they unmasked him finally at the end of Return of the Jedi, it was Sebastian Shaw as the character, and then as the Force Ghost as well, Anakin, until that got removed for Hayden Christensen. But it still is Sebastian Shaw, even in the new edits of Return of the Jedi, when the helmet comes off. Right. Right, they haven't. Wait, actually, did they put? They didn't put Hayden. They didn't do a Hayden thing.
No, no, no.
I haven't seen those in so long. Yeah, it's still Sebastian Shaw.
They just shaved off his eyebrows.
Right. Yeah. So, which I get it. That makes sense. It
makes a lot of sense. Sure. You know, you get burned.
Yes.
Burned to a crisp.
So anyway, so but David Prowse was the man in the suit, the physical presence of Darth Vader. So.
Oh.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be missed, and. One little piece of trivia is that he actually trained Christopher Reeve, when he was bulking up for the role of Superman.
Interesting.
That guy's an icon. He had such a presence on the screen, even though, you know, his voice wasn't being used, his face couldn't be seen. He just was the embodiment of Vader, and that the kind of looming presence when he, you know, put his hands on his hips and stared out, or he pointed a finger. I mean, that was a very powerful character that was brought to life through David Prowse. So he will definitely be missed.
I mean, it's funny that we're talking about that now, also with The Mandalorian, where we are seeing actors behind a mask and not seen, and he was kind of the first to pioneer that in such an iconic way. So it kind of comes full circle that we're talking about The Mandalorian and then that now.
Yeah. He also trained Carrie Elwes for The Princess Bride. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Which not a role synonymous with physicality necessarily.
No,
but,
no, no.
You know, that's still
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. So, all right. So, rest in peace, David Prowse. And there was some more news that was non-Star Wars related this week. Actually, just what, the other day, it came out that Joss Whedon.
He apparently had a job.
He did. All this time, Joss Whedon was working on a show for HBO.
We didn't know.
Yeah. And if, apparently it was in the works for like 2 years. He had this thing in development, and he's no longer, it was called The Nevers, by the way, which is ironic considering we're never going to see Joss Whedon attached to that show because he is now out. So there were conflicting releases that came out, or at least maybe not necessarily conflicting releases, but they were, Joss Whedon released a statement that was long, and then HBO released a statement that was very brief. Whedon got into all this stuff about how, you know, it's difficult to be in production now because of the pandemic and going on and on and on. And then HBO basically was like, we've parted ways with Joss Whedon. You know, we still look forward to bringing you The Nevers or something like that, you know, in the future.
Yeah, so Joss Whedon was like, I'm exhausted. I'm going to step back and like put my energy, you know, back into my life, which is like going through exciting changes. I'm like deeply, like basically all the, like you can Google like how to step down nicely, you know, from a job, and it's all fluff. Like he had this whole paragraph. HBO basically was like, we've parted ways, like you just said. And I don't know if you guys saw the Ray Fisher tweet.
I did not.
But he said, Ray Fisher tweeted, I think a couple days ago, he tweeted, I have no intention of allowing Joss Whedon to use the old Hollywood tactic of exiting, stepping down, or walking away to cover for his terrible behavior. Warner Media's Justice League investigation has been in full swing for over 3 weeks now. This is undoubtedly a result of it.
Yeah. So
meaning him stepping down from the Nevers is a result of the investigation.
Which is no surprise, because that's what I was going to say. I was going to, obviously that tweet kind of opens the whole thing up, but I was going to say that the speculation is going to be that because it was a show being developed at HBO, right? Yep. Which is the same parent company, Warner Media, that the timing could not have been a coincidence that with this Ray Fisher investigation going mm-hmm. on, that all of a sudden Whedon steps down from this show that we didn't even realize he was working on. It can't be a coincidence that we don't know. And obviously it is just speculation for now, but clearly the optics are not good.
Yeah. And, you know, Whedon's statement is all about saving face. You know, his PR rep wrote that and was like, we're going to dangle some of the personal stuff out there because God forbid anyone attack that. Then you kind of look bad. So they're going to put that out there. And, HBO statement was very matter of fact, obviously, and I've seen those notes go around throughout my career when you get the two liner. We are no longer working together, but you were fired. They've moved on. Like, good for, you know, he shouldn't even have said anything because when you have those two very different kind of statements, like the writing is on the wall, you're trying to save face and they're basically like, we've wiped our hands clean of you, so like go on about your bad self. We even said, where Joss Whedon been? I guess he's been still working with Warner Media, surprisingly, which is so crazy,
for 2 years on a show that
I know, like, that's wild. But like, yeah, dude, you're about to get tainted. Like, you're kind of done. I'm sure Ray Fisher was like, dude, you're not getting off the hook. I saw your statement, bro. Like, because both companies, well, I say both companies, but like both HBO / Warner Media and Joss Whedon are doing face saving. Whereas like I said, Joss Whedon's going into all the, I've got all these exciting things and I put all this labor, blah, 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 that's all bullshit. And HBO is like, nah, you're done. Your axe is a very corporate approach to taking a termination. And they don't want to, keeping it short and sweet means that you don't have to get into anything else that could be factual. And so Ray Fisher kind of blowing that whole thing up.
Yeah.
It's like... Dude, hey, listen. You keep on throwing those grenades, bro.
Sure.
Like,
he is. I mean, my reaction when I first saw that article was like, all right, I didn't know he was even working on something for like 2 years, nonetheless, because this whole other controversy came up within that time. And then seeing the two different statements, I was like, something is amiss here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They didn't even add in a line like, although he's very talented, we wish him well, or something.
We hope to one day work with him again in the future, all that typical. Yeah.
He's done. He's done. Like,
it was funny. I saw tweets. I think the news broke on like Wednesday. And I saw tweets. Someone said something like, Joss Whedon will be stepping down from the whatever the name of the show is. And
the Nevers.
Has appointed Zack Snyder to step in to help him with his vision. And I was like, something's going on here. And I didn't even want to get into it.
And you know what? In fairness to Ray Fisher, him sending out that tweet, one of his big points, his narrative here has been like, he doesn't want things to be just swept under the rug, right? He doesn't want like the typical corporate thing where they just kind of quietly do things, because he's mm-hmm. been very outspoken, and from his perspective, he's got to be like, hey, look, I've been putting my career, my reputation, my everything on the line by kind of talking about these investigations and these incidents, and if things are going to start to come down because of that, like, people need to know that that's why it's happening, because like, I need to be, some validation here, since I'm the one that put it out on the line. And there were, a lot of people, us included, have been kind of like, well, let's see what happens. And, is this stuff really as bad as it is? But now if people start losing jobs because of it, or start being like kind of pushed aside because of it, like, we should know that, like, we should know what
this is a W for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And he should be, letting people know about it, because again, that's part of that whole machine of like, the studio would love for things to just quietly go away, as you saw by their statement. Yeah, that's typical stuff, and he's not interested in that. And I think eventually, you know, we are going to find out, it seems like probably sooner than later, what the real story was here. And, you know, we'll see what happens with people like Joss Whedon. I mean, again, we don't know exactly what happened, you know, and what the actual allegations were. But, you know, we'll have to see what happens with his thing. I mean, you look at like a James Gunn thing. I mean, that was, you know, tweets that were in terribly poor taste. But right. like, it, as far as like anybody knows, like as some people like working with him, he hasn't ever like doesn't seem to have created like hostile work environment or anything like that. So he got a second chance. And now he's kind of back. But someone like Whedon, if this stuff is serious and if it's like hostile work environment type stuff, then, you know, who knows what's going to really happen. I mean, it's ultimately, you know, money talks in a lot of situations. So I'm sure he'll get a shot to do something at some point, but, you know, see what happens.
Yeah.
So the last thing, I guess, to talk about is the fact that as we record this today, which is Sunday, November 29th, I think today is the day that Netflix, their exclusive window to the rights to Daredevil for TV and film expire and go back to Marvel Studios. There was a 2-year window from the time the show got canceled before the rights would go back. And if I guess at any point in that 2-year period, Netflix decided to renew the show or bring it back, then they would keep the rights, which is not going to happen, obviously. So now there's a hashtag, I think, Save Daredevil campaign going on, which is, I guess, geared towards trying to, you know, see if Marvel Studios can revive the show or at least keep Charlie Cox in the role if they do decide to do something with the character going forward. So that's something. We'll see what happens there. There is a, I don't know if anybody's heard, there's a streaming service called Disney Plus that, and there's also another one called Hulu that Disney has a majority ownership in that certainly could, you know, be ripe for some cool programming. So you never know. Amazing.
I mean, first of all, Daredevil was such a well done show.
Yeah.
So good. And it going back to Marvel is awesome for a couple of things. And yes, Charlie Cox is great and I would love to see him pop up in more shows, a movie maybe, but what I really want to see is Vincent D'Onofrio come back as Kingpin and face off against Spider-Man.
Yes.
That's what I would love. I mean, there is, I mean, you thought Thanos was a badass mother. You know what?
No.
Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better.
The good news is there's a this multiverse concept that they're touring around with, for and Spider-Man's going to be involved in it. So
I'd love
just saying, you know, if you could bring Jamie Foxx back as Electro, you certainly could bring in Vincent D'Onofrio as Kingpin.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Or Daredevil. No, you just like, we haven't talked about Marvel for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Like Marvel's kind of been in like, he's like the like son in the closet, you know.
Yeah, it's in its chrysalis state.
We haven't talked about it, but this is kind of exciting to think about, because I thought Daredevil was the best out of the four Netflix shows that they did, and they filmed in New York, and they had a special deal to film in New York, and that's why they did the four of them. Daredevil was the best one, hands down. And I hope if they do a series and if they bring it back, they bring back all of the actors, all of the same actors, because that was magic. Their chemistry between all of them was magic.
Yeah. No, the Punisher to me was also.
Punisher. Those were the top two.
Yeah,
Iron Fist was blah, and then what was the other one?
Luke Cage, Jessica Jones.
The season of Jessica Jones was pretty good, but second, and I stopped watching the third.
And Defenders was a disappointment.
That was
all disappointments.
Yeah. And then Jessica Jones Luke Cage.
Yeah.
That was okay. That was all right.
Yeah.
But there was just a different, I don't know why, because they all filmed in New York, but obviously they had to use different production companies. There was a different production value that you saw with Daredevil and Punisher than I think you saw with the other sets.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious to find out, like, if they were really different or if they use the same production company, because it felt different. It felt like Daredevil and Punisher were done on a much, like, higher scale, and maybe the other shows didn't have that big of a budget. Like, that's just how it felt.
Mm. I also think there was, like, you know, the storytelling for Punisher was very, very visceral. Because they get into, like, PTSD. There's a lot of, like, really, really deep stuff that was happening there. And so I kind of got immersed in that. And then Daredevil, the fight choreography. It sets a bar. It sets a very, very high bar. Jessica Jones, that's, you know, Daredevil, look, they all have superpowers, right? But, like, Jessica Jones was, like the highest of the superpowered people, in my opinion. Like, maybe Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Like, she had a very different vibe to it. They went, like, very, you know, they try to do this, like, New Age noir type thing in my mind, right? And then Luke Cage was, like, too on the nose street. You know what I'm saying? Like,
That's what I meant.
Like on the, you know, almost, you know what I'm saying.
That's exactly what I meant. Like, one felt like an actual, like, in-depth production, and then the other felt like, let's go with the cliches. Like, this is a strong woman, and this is, like, a bulletproof black man, and we're just going to go with those themes. Like, I hated her character. I hated the way they wrote her. I did not like the actress that played her. I didn't find anything. Kristen Ritter? I didn't find anything I can kind of, like, just, like, sink into it. It just felt like so surface. That's why I was saying I'd be interested to know what production companies took over what part.
I think they were all Netflix productions.
Because it was all Netflix, but I wonder if they outsourced it to, like, specific teams, because I know as an actor, when we heard the news that Netflix was coming with 4 freaking action, like, Marvel shows to New York, every single actor in New York was like, I need to get on that show. It turned into, like, a, I need to get on Law and Order SVU to, like, actually make it. You know what I mean? Like, that's like your badge of honor in New York is to get on Law and Order SVU. But when we found out that those 4 Netflix shows were coming, it was like, I need to get on that Netflix show. And I know a lot of people that did get on Daredevil for, like, 1 line or 2 or whatever. Right. And all the stunt community was really excited, because then you didn't have to go to LA. You didn't have to go to California. Right. You can do that stuff here. And they're 4 Marvel shows. You're going to be in the Marvel universe. You're going to be on the website. It was just so exciting.
Marvel Universe? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, that was the original plan, but it didn't last long.
That was the original plan, And I just, not to just beat a dead horse, but I just felt like 2 of the 4 shows had different feels. And now that we're talking about Daredevil, I'm really excited, because I felt like they had the magic puzzle. They had the pieces, you know, like, it was magic. If you bring it back, don't ruin it, because the fans are going to be so pissed off, because we were so mad that it got canceled and that it wasn't coming back. So I feel like just bring it back exactly how it is, and then, like Aaron said, kick it into that multiverse, man. Like, bring Spider-Man into it. Like, Vincent D'Onofrio, like, are you doing anything? Come play this role, and he will say yes.
Well, the thing is with Daredevil, too, is the character, the Matt Murdock character actually fits in, because he's a lawyer. And, you know, you could have him interacting with other people from the MCU in that capacity, you know, so it's very easy. I mean, that's how the comics worked, right? You could have him, and, you know, there's no reason why the character itself couldn't exist as a lawyer first,
they're
right?
Filming Spider-Man right now. What if he like pops up?
And well, I mean, listen, Peter Parker might need an attorney, right? The way they left things off at the end of Spider-Man Far From Home. So in that parallel, you know, whatever that was supposed to be, the multiverse with that J. Jonah Jameson and stuff, like, it's very possible that he might need some representation. Just say
you heard it right here. I mean, they're filming Spider-Man now. They're also starting to film Hawkeye in Brooklyn. Mm. The code name for it is called Anchor Point. So I'm going to be looking out for all my background.
When you walk down the street, you're like, the streets are blocked off, or.
You see the little colored signs, but also I get like background notices and sometimes I'll and probably shouldn't say it over here, but you know, sometimes I know what's casting.
All right.
So who knows, when I get back to New York, maybe I'll just find myself on set.
Yeah. Drop a little gem.
All right. Cool. So well, I guess that's about it. Next week, we're going to do the whole show on, we're going to do an in-depth review of the Saved by the Bell reboot on Peacock. And, oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Aaron, get ready.
Absolutely not.
Aaron, I expect the same level of notes that you bring to the Mandalorian conversation.
Please get the hell out of here with that. I showed the trailer to Jess, and she was like, you're not actually going to watch that shit, right? I'm like, no, I'm just showing it to you. Like, what are you thinking of that? She's like, they look so stupid. I'm like, yeah. She said, why would they bring this show back? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a shtick. This is Peacock's.
I wish they brought back Baywatch.
Like no one ever.
I freaking love
Baywatch. Well, they tried to with the movie.
It was so bad.
Which didn't work
out. Yeah, but it was bad. They should do a show.
So well, bad. I mean, oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see. We'll see. I'll listen, guys. I'll be on the road. I'll be driving
soon.
I'll see you guys in New York next week.
Definitely.
All right.
I'll be there.
All right, and we should do some sort of virtual watch something. Maybe we should do the finale for The Mandalorian.
Well, we're gonna have the finale for The Mandalorian, which is gonna be right before Wonder Woman.
Oh, right. That's a thing, too. Jeez. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm not getting up at... I'm not watching The Mandalorian, though, at 6 o'clock in the morning like you do, Aaron, to do
a watch along. All right, guys. Let me tell our listeners, right? Like, I have to remember to put my phone on silent on Thursday nights, because Friday mornings at 6 a.m., 7 a.m., I'm an hour behind, so... Granted, they're an hour ahead, but like 7 a.m., 8 a.m., Aaron will text us with like mind blown emoji, The Mandalorian, and all of his thoughts on the episode, which is great. Yeah. I love your enthusiasm.
And then I send my customary like preset reply, haven't watched it yet. And then go on.
That's like my little ritual. It's like I drop my kids off like so early in the morning and I'm like, I think I'm going to watch The Mandalorian right now. It's like I eat my breakfast and I watch it and I'm like, yes, all right.
I envy you, man. I wish I could get up that early. Do you know what time
I
got up today?
No, don't say shit. What's wrong with you?
I got up at noon today. Ooh. I woke up at 12 today.
I can't even remember the last time. Maybe it was like when I did after hours, when I was like deep in the club scene and I like show up at like 1 a.m. to the club and you know, party till like 1 o'clock in the afternoon and sleep for 12 hours and wake up at 12 the next day. Yeah.
Yeah. I got up at noon today, so.
Good for you. I don't like you now.
Okay.
Listen, it's a pandemic year. Sure. I'm not working. Otherwise, I'd be up at 7.
Tell my kids that shit.
All right. So, on that note, go to thefanboygarage.com and check out our episode archive. You can check out the merch store. We still have one piece of Star Wars merch that we're legally, for now, allowed to sell, apparently, which is the Sith shirt, Sith design, rather. And, of course, you could join the conversation on the social medias, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebook at the Fanboy Garage. And, of course, our YouTube channel, Fanboy Garage. You want to go there and you want to subscribe and you want to watch these episodes and you want to like them and you want to get the notifications about them and tell all your friends about them and all that fun stuff. And you could find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
You guys can find me at Banana_TFG.
As my cat decides to photobomb right now. Look at this guy. Oh, dude, you fat cat. Get the heck off of me. No, seriously, he's like all up in my... And you can find me at AAronSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you again for listening to episode 122 of the Fanboy Garage. We'll catch you guys next week. Peace!
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.